It's our weekly look at Congress with USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer. After weeks of negotiations over abortion language and a sex trafficking bill, the Senate has come to an agreement. That clears the way for a confirmation vote on Attorney General nominee Loretta Lynch, who has been awaiting a vote for 5 months.
And a new book investigating corporate lobbying of Congress came to the conclusion that corporations spend more lobbying than taxpayers spend to fund Congress in its entirety. Here with us now is Paul Singer, joins us each Wednesday with the latest from Washington. Paul, good to have you back.
Hey, nice to be back. How are you doing, Rob?
All right, well, good. So how did the Senate finally come to this agreement on this human trafficking bill?
Oh, man, these guys sometimes are just a hoot. You know, this is one of those things where somebody didn't do their homework, and the Republicans added to this legislation otherwise, you know, non-partisan, non-controversial, really, legislation on human trafficking to set up a restitution fund, basically. The Republicans stuck in a sentence that essentially says, as they like to do on some of these bills, that you can't use any of this money for an abortion. Well, you already can't use federal money for abortions. This is what we call the Hyde Amendment. So it was sort of unnecessary, but they keep trying to add it to legislation, and the Democrats keep shooting it down, and it becomes an argument. Well, the Democrats failed to read the bill and didn't notice this language until it was basically too late to do anything except block the entire bill for months while they tried to figure out some way around this mess. And in the end, they compromised on some language that I couldn't even begin to explain to you, that sort of slices out this piece of the pie and adds to that piece of the pie and says, not here, but then there, and everybody walks away, you know, more or less feeling they've won something. But really, if someone had read the bill 5 months ago, this wouldn't have been a problem.
And ultimately, this is a bill, the main part of it is something that everybody, there's bipartisan agreement. Yeah. They all wanted this thing, mostly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, this is part of what I teach my students, is that, you know, you got to read the bill because everybody wants to hang their little ornament on whatever Christmas tree is moving most quickly. This was the one that everybody wanted to move, so somebody hung an ornament on it and nobody noticed. And then they had to spend a bunch of time unpacking and figuring out how to get the ornament off it.
Well, here's something you can teach me. Why did the delay on this bill have something to do with a delayed vote on a confirmation of the new attorney general?
I don't think it really did. The Senate Majority Leader said he was not going to bring up the vote on Loretta Lynch until we resolve this problem, because if we can't do these sort of simple bipartisan things, then what's the point? Now, of course, there was nothing really stopping him from bringing up the Loretta Lynch nomination any time in the meanwhile. He just sort of set down that marker. And I really think they were just sort of, you know, it was an opportunity to delay a vote they didn't want to have anyhow. So now they'll get this out of the way, and then they'll go ahead and have the vote. And, you know, there's some argument that over the time that they've been waiting, the support for Loretta Lynch has waned in the Senate, which just makes it a less celebratory moment for her, and possibly another reason to raise eyebrows, because she will pass with a smaller margin.
Is it long, normal to have this long a wait for a confirmation of a cabinet member?
No, it usually moves pretty quickly, unless there's something extraordinarily controversial about the cabinet member. And again, in this case, when they first nominated Lynch, the general discussion was, she'll have a lot of support. You know, even Republicans say that she's qualified, and, you know, that what they don't like about her is that she's too close to Barack Obama and not sufficiently distant from Eric Holder. And all of the arguments about Loretta Lynch are really arguments about Barack Obama and Eric Holder, but that sooner or later they'd probably just give up and let her go ahead and pass. But no, it doesn't usually take this long.
And you said the margin of support may not be as great, but you think that she has the votes to be confirmed this week?
I think so. Yeah. I haven't been tracking it, you know, particularly carefully, but you know, my impression has been that she had the votes to be confirmed, but the number has been getting smaller over the past couple of months while this has been hanging out there, and people have had more opportunity to pressure senators to say no.
Talking to USA Today's Paul Singer about the news out this week in Congress. Now, a new book getting some attention on the influence of lobbying in Congress. The book's called The Business of America is Lobbying by Lee Drutman. Makes the case that as of last year, at $2.6 billion a year, corporations spend more money lobbying Congress than we taxpayers spend funding Congress altogether. I know you track money in politics, its influence. Is this a surprising number? Is this an alarming number, do you think?
No, you know, I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I mean, if the whole point is that corporations are willing to spend a lot of money to try and influence the workings of Congress, you know, Congress is not going to grow. In fact, Congress, the budgets for Congress over the past several years have been shrinking a little bit, in the House fairly significantly, in the Senate a little bit, down, I think the last number was down something like 10 or 11% over the past few years. So, you know, Congress isn't going to grow, but businesses and more businesses will compete more for scarce resources, and they'll spend more competing for them. And, you know, the whole point is that lobbying is a private venture. They can spend as much as they want. Congress is a public venture. It has to maintain its costs. So I wouldn't be too surprised that people spend more on lobbying than Congress spends on itself. I'd be more surprised if Congress spends more. Industries spend more on lobbying than Congress spends on, you know, a federal agency of some sort. That would be sort of interesting.
How much effect does the lobbying money from corporations have on what Congress actually does? Are they throwing their money away here, or does it make a difference?
Oh, no, I'm sure it makes a huge difference. I mean, the people have these very cartoonish views of what lobbyists do, but in general, the whole purpose of lobbying is if someone is going to propose new legislation to regulate, oh, I don't know, public radio stations, you guys would have somebody on staff paid to go talk to Congress to say, well, if you're going to regulate public radio stations, here's what you shouldn't do, because you'll shut us down. The idea of the lobbyist in that case is to provide information to the Congress about legislation and the impact of legislation that they're about to consider. Right? There's nothing nefarious about that, necessarily. Now, where people get concerned is when lobbyists and lobbying firms can spend an enormous amount of money basically deluging members of Congress with information, hiring their staff or the revolving door. They can hire members who've left Congress to go back and lobby, and using all that influence to sort of unfairly balance the scales in their favor. That's harder to measure. But in many of these things, it's corporate interest against corporate interest, spy versus spy, as we would say. So, yeah, they outspend each other.
Well, speaking of spying, you in a recent piece gave us a little insider's take on the Washington Correspondents' Dinner, and I want to spend a little time with you on that. You're planning to attend Nerd Prom. Is that the phrase that you and others have used to describe this thing?
Yeah, in fact, there's actually a video, a new documentary out this year called Nerd Prom by a reporter here in D.C. who used to have to cover it. He used to cover the sort of party scene, and he's calling the movie Nerd Prom. That's what they refer to it. It's kind of the joke. There's a White House Correspondents Association has this annual dinner. You know, and it used to be a bunch of reporters get together and they, you know, give out their reporter awards, and some of the politicians come, and that's great. And in the mid-1980s, I guess it was, somebody invited, I think it was Fawn Hall, who was like Oliver North's secretary or something. And then it just all went downhill from there. They started, you know, every celebrity and every news organization wanted to get the biggest celebrity, and Lindsay Lohan has been there, and, you know, the cast of House of Cards was there, I guess, last year, the year before. I mean, just, it has become, there's actually a red carpet now where all the celebrities go walk and get their pictures taken. But, you know, what I wrote in my column is that underneath this, it's still just a trade association dinner. You know, it's a bunch of reporters who get together, and we haven't seen each other all year, and we drink together, and we applaud at the awards that are being given to our colleagues. You know, no big deal.
But you write that you have felt anxiety in the past, other journalists, about the optics, as they say in the political world, the ethics of the event. Why is that?
There's two issues involved. The first issue involved is that we all invite members of Congress to be our guests at these dinners. And so there's this question of should we be that cozy with a member of Congress that we invite them to be our guest at a lavish dinner. There's an ethics question on both sides, right? I mean, A, should the member of Congress accept a lavish dinner? And B, should we be inviting members of Congress to socialize with us? The bigger problem is outside the dinner itself. When you get into the parties that go on, there are these, everybody's trying to throw these lavish affairs where members of Congress and political types and Hollywood stars and reporters can all, you know, sort of dance the night away in these very luxurious events with gift bags and stuff. And it just raises this whole question about have we lost touch with the American people as reporters if we think it is appropriate to go, you know, hang out and get drunk with politicians at some high-dollar affair where everybody's wearing a tuxedo? It sort of reminds the rest of the world that we are not among them. We are part of the celebrity class. And there is a real sensitivity to that. I think all of us who cover government officials for a living need to be very cautious about not becoming captured by our prey and thinking that, oh, well, they're nice people. I've partied with them. Therefore, they couldn't be doing anything wrong. Fact of the matter is, they could be. And the fact that you're drinking with them tonight should not in any way, shape, or form stop you from writing a critical story about them tomorrow.
So you've come to terms with it. You could still write that critical story about them tomorrow, even though you overcooked chicken with them the night before?
Yeah. In fact, 1 year, I think I mentioned this in the column, I was sitting at a table with this congressman who was complaining about the fact that, you know, reporters were investigating his personal finances. I was one of the reporters. it didn't dawn on him exactly who I was, and I had been doing some investigations. So, yeah, I got no problem being nice to you today and then calling you tomorrow and say, hey, look, it was really a pleasure, and I really enjoyed our conversation, and I really am interested in your tax return and how come this dollar figure is too high.
Well, it has been a pleasure having this conversation, Paul. I think we'll bring Veronica back on mic now. This is your last day as a regular guest discussing Congress. You've been with us every Wednesday pretty much since January of last year. A lot of great insight, a lot of laughs. Thanks a lot for all the time you've spent with us over the last year plus,
Paul.
Yeah,
it has been a pleasure hanging out with you on Wednesdays, learning stuff, kicking the ball around, talking Congress. And we hope that you'll miss us as much as we're going to miss you.
It has been absolutely my joy to do it. I appreciate you guys inviting me, and I certainly hope that it's not the last time we have a conversation just because I'm not going to be your regular 4 o'clock Wednesday phone call or 3 o'clock your time.
Yeah, and you're going to be doing some investigative reporting, so you will come back and talk about some of your investigative reports.
Yeah, the money and the politics stuff is a lot of what I'm doing, so I'm sure we'll keep in touch.
All right, looking forward to it. Paul, really, thanks a lot. It's been a blast.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
That was USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer. He joined us virtually every Wednesday since January 2014 with the latest on Congress. Today, as we said, is last day as a Wednesday regular. We'll miss him, but we'll see him again.